Blog Talk Radio.
He is the host with the most, and he's rocking coast to coast smooth. She is the lady with her hands.
Where in the hell did you get your news from?
Drama. Together you got smooth drama. Smooth drama.
Welcome to Smooth Drama. Dick Hugger being silly over here.
Hi.
Don't get back from the microphone. He's spitting on my microphone. Today's show, very special show. We are going to be interviewing Sonita Penland this evening. We'll be calling in. We will be calling her in just a few minutes after we make our special announcements.
Phone contest. Smooth on the phone.
Send all your pictures to.
Guys, once again,
Dick at smoothdrama.com.
Once again, guys in thongs or in boxers, Smooth Drama boxers. If you don't send them the butter, you just wait for your click, because I'm deleting it straight up. That's all. Nothing homophobic about it. I just don't want to see a guy in boxers. I can do
boxers.
That.
I thought you were promoting the thong.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Or whatever.
The boxer contest was for you. You're the judge. No. What's wrong with you now?
No.
Anyway.
For those of you that are just tuning in, tonight's show, we are going to be interviewing Sonita Penland, who is a lieutenant commander in the Navy.
In the Navy.
And who had just a slight ordeal run-in, and she's going to tell her story. So we are very anxious to hear that. We do have a couple of people that have sent in questions, and hopefully throughout the show, Sonita can answer any questions. If you want to call in and ask, you can call the number.
646-929-2037.
And throughout the show, if you want to send in your questions, you can. You can send them to smoothdrama@smoothdrama.com. Also, after the show, if you'd like to send in questions that you'd like us to get answered for you, you can either send them, go to our website, hit the Contact Us button, or you can send us an email at smoothdrama@smoothdrama.com. Y'all got that?
Word.
So, all right, we are going to give Sonita a call. And, again, that number to call into the show to ask Sonita questions is
646-929-2037.
Yes. Okay. So, hopefully we don't have any technical difficulties. Here we go. Let's see here.
Buy Smooth Drama thongs. They will fit you very well, even if you have a big... did I say big front?
Yeah.
Hello?
May I speak to Sonita?
This is she.
Hi there, it's Andrea, or excuse me, Butterfacon and Dick Hugger.
Hi, how are you doing?
We're fine. How are you?
Just fine.
You are live on the air. I did give you a little intro. We explained that you, hopefully, correct me if I'm wrong, lieutenant commander in the Navy?
Yes.
And you've been in 19 years?
Yes, that's correct.
Currently 19 years. But when your whole, I want to say, ordeal began, you were in the Navy for 18 years?
Yes.
So we're going to let you go ahead and tell a little bit about yourself, what you're doing now, and what happened.
Like you said, I've been in for 19 years when everything went down. I had just reported to San Diego back in early 2006. I reported to then Naval Coastal Warfare Security Group 1. It's now called Maritime Expeditionary Security Group, as their supply officer. I had already served about 18 years in the Navy on the East Coast, active duty supply officer out there, ridden various ships, performed various duties as a supply officer, from dispersing officer in charge of the whole logistics operation on board ships. So I had a lot of experience under my belt when I first reported here. And quickly, upon assuming the position, I started uncovering a lot of questionable financial practices, contracting practices, relating to civilian defense contractors performing inherently governmental functions. And for you listeners who's not aware of that, whenever the military hire defense contractors, there's rules and regulations that governs what they are to do and what they are not allowed to do. And that's governed under the federal acquisition regulations. So, you know, questioning their performance, a lot of these contractors were, you know, ex-military senior officers, so they knew better. But when you have a situation where these guys are still working within a military environment, a lot of them still like to wear their rank, so to speak. So I received a lot of flack from the contractors, but what I was not aware of that was brewing were the, you know, my former commanding officer, who is now retired, was pretty much setting himself up for a post-employment opportunity, you know, with the same contracting company. So the more and more I start digging, the more I uncovered relating to bid rigging of a particular contract. So now we're into May, June time frame in 2006. He was receptive initially upon my initial complaints, but he, meeting my former commanding officer, started receiving a lot of advisement from one of the senior contractors. So they, in my opinion, started plotting to get rid of me. I received a really good fitness report evaluation in October 2006, and I also was promoted to lieutenant commander 2 months prior to that in August. So now you have a situation where the supply officer, she's uncovering more and more. Now she has a little bit more rank under her belt. So in late 2006, October, November time period, I got a new boss. My former boss, he retired. So my new boss comes on board, and he was briefed, of course, hey, you know, Cy, she's by the book. She's difficult to work with, you know, just to try to discredit me. So in December of 2006, I got a phone call at work one day about my former best friend, who was a contracting officer in Iraq. At the time, her daughter told me that, unfortunately, she had committed suicide relating to, you know, contracting bribes and so forth. And because we deployed units over to Kuwait, I started asking a lot more questions about our contracting practices overseas. So January 2007, a friend of mine who was going through a pretty nasty divorce, already separated from his wife. His wife, unfortunately for me, had come across some photographs that he had accidentally downloaded to his laptop, and how he came into possession of photographs of me was because they were having altercations, you know, during their separation. So I advised him to protect himself, of course, just in case, you know, she launched allegations against him and tried to get money and so forth out of his divorce settlement. So I went to my camera. He downloads some photographs, and it was over, probably over 100 pictures of me dating, you know, 2 years prior to that. And there were also pictures of me and Annette's boyfriend at the time as well. So she comes across these pictures. She makes an allegation at his command, you know, alleging that him and I were having some sort of affair, you know, as a reason why he wanted to divorce her. So when his command chose not to even investigate the allegations, within a day or two, she launched the allegations at my command. But because she was calling me repeatedly, my command chose to give me a military protective order. And it was actually stated, we're going to give you a military protective order to protect you from her because she appears to be a woman scorned.
Is that like a, what is that called?
A restraining order.
Yes.
Yes, that would be a restraining order.
Okay. I'm just joking.
So it was only for 10 days, and it never materialized. And during that time, I was actually on temporary assignment over to Korea.
Now, Sai?
Yes.
When she was contacting, was she threatening you?
No. As a matter of fact, on the evening of the 4th, well into the morning of January the 5th, they were both calling me, and they were in the middle of an altercation, the husband and wife. So I asked both of them not to even contact me anymore. And, you know, during my court-martial trial, the government was aware that she had been calling me just because one of the military attorneys that I had shared that information with the prosecutor. So they intentionally omitted my phone records. I mean, the government was so bad with retrieving personal information that they subpoenaed my personal email accounts, my personal home records, cell phone records. And then, you know, just to see everyone who I was calling, because they were aware at that time, too, that I had filed IG complaints against them. So seeing all of these phone calls on my cell phone record made by her when they introduced their evidence during my court-martial trial, they omitted.
What is an IG complaint?
Inspector General.
Okay.
Hotline complaint.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
No problem.
So they omitted my the records of her phone calls to me on the 4th and the 5th. So, like I said, nothing materialized from the military protective order in January. So now mid-February 2007, of course, I came across more irregularities, financial irregularities at the command. And the company that had hired all of these defense contractors had a mid-year review meeting in Norfolk. And it's just kind of ironic how during the week of that meeting, about a week after, they were discussing extending the contract, but I guess they determined, hey, we may have some problems as long as Sai is still at the command. So a week and a half later, the command had presented me with a letter of instruction alleging that I had substandard performance of duty, when 4 months prior to that, I received, on a scale of 5-0, a 4.33 fitness report evaluation. So I'm like, hey, where is this coming from? It was 3 pages, almost ironclad. I asked for an opportunity to refute it. The commanding officer, he told me no. He denied me that opportunity. So I was under so much stress. I went to see a doctor. They diagnosed me with an ulcer. So I took off work for about 2.5 weeks. And when I had come back, I left something out. Right before they issued me the letter of instruction, the wife made another allegation at the command that I was calling her, harassing her again. That was on the 21st or the 22nd of February.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so 4 days later is when they gave me the letter of instruction.
What I was going to say is, like, you remember you said before earlier that they had a hard time getting your record, and it seems like if they could, because in reading up on the story, they made the comment that you were calling and harassing, but they never mentioned
her calling you
or the protective order that you had to take out on her.
No, the military assigned me the protective order.
Right.
But
that never came out.
Oh, of course. You know, they're only going to want to report their side of the story, which is why I'm on the air right now, you know, telling my side. So after I received the letter of instruction, which I think I received that as a result of her, you know, alleging that I had called her again, harassing her. And see, that right there was the thing, was she said I was calling her, harassing her. Her and I, we had conversations. You know, I never denied that we never had conversations because she was trying to get alimony from her ex-husband, and they had no children, you know, with her having so many years in the military, and he's an officer now, and he's a junior officer, so their pay was almost equal.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept trying to advise her that, you know, she would probably not even be entitled to alimony. But, you know, I was aware of certain things that he was doing, certain things that she was doing, so she asked me, she would, her and I, you know, during our conversation, she would ask if I would help her to get alimony. And I was like, no, I'm not. So
now, before this all started, were you two friends?
No,
okay.
We were never friends.
Okay.
Did any of this ever come up during the trial? That you guys were in contact with each other?
She, the way that she presented it, was I would call her repeatedly at her command, and because of my rank, I used my rank to gain her attention. So out of courtesy of not her not wanting to disrespect a lieutenant commander, she talked to me. But, you know, hey, if she felt that I was harassing her, why did she even continue her conversation?
Right.
Wow. And to let you guys know, too, anytime an enlisted person make an allegation about an officer, that is a violation of the UCMJ, disrespect to a superior officer. So why my command even accepted the allegation from her in January of 2007 is still beyond me.
Well, I think you know why.
Oh, of course we know why. We know why they even pursued the charges against me, not, you know, whether or not I committed adultery or not.
Right.
I was a whistleblower. They knew what I knew.
Right.
And, you know, to get into why I even blew the whistle on the command was when I had come back off leave. You know, at this point they presented me with a report of offense. Charges, you know, charging me of adultery, charging me of kind of becoming of an officer, making a false statement, saying that basically that I said that I never called her, when the statement was I never called harassing her. And the next statement was, and they said that I had emailed pictures of her husband to her to show proof that him and I was having an affair. Now, this is just using your common sense. If you're going to show the other spouse proof that you're having an affair, I think you will probably email pictures, or at least pictures of the two of you engaged
right.
in sexual acts. So why would I email pictures of just him by himself.
Because you're smart like that.
And she said that, now keep in mind, during the entire trial, it was, the wife was the government's star witness. She was the one to identify who was in the photograph. They did not present a forensic investigator. Even the photographs were never even time date stamped. You know, if they charged me with having an affair from September of 2006 to January 2007, and all of these pictures weren't even time date stamped,
how do they know?
Excuse me?
How do they know where these pictures came from, when, how old they were?
Exactly. And, you know, she said, she alleged that I emailed her, you know, from an account, the other woman, at a Hotmail account, when the government subpoenaed this Hotmail account. Hotmail came back saying that they didn't even know who the account belonged to.
Oh, wow.
And they had no proof of any of her so-called evidence being, you know, related to me, with the exception of my Sprint phone record and my COTS phone record. And the government authenticated their my phone bill for the command cell phone. So, of course, they had to get all of this evidence in, you know. So when the jury seen the photographs, and then the prosecutor kept the photographs on the screen, you know, basically just to prejudice the jury members.
Right.
So they didn't ask the smart questions like, hey, you know, exactly when were they taken as far as the dates and so forth.
But
so my case is still going through an appeal right
okay,
now, and I don't even know the status of the appeal.
So I need it. Shouldn't your lawyer have been asking some of them questions?
Oh, I went through my record of trial, and a lawyer presented, it was three cases that during a motions hearing to omit the photograph and being entered into evidence, and the judge overruled his argument. So after that, there were 19 other occasions where, just going through my record of trial, where he never did object. So I looked over at him, and especially when they presented my Sprint phone records, and they started, now my billing cycle is from the 1st through the 30th or the 31st, and when the paralegal of the government was the one came up to present this evidence and not a representative from Sprint, he alleged that Sprint had provided him the phone records, you know, starting from the 9th of January instead of the 1st.
That's that word that Butter likes,
allegedly. Legend. We talk about that word all the time. Now, did you choose this attorney?
Of course I chose him, but I also fired him, too. When he failed to object during the middle of the trial, I fired him. I'm like, you know, hey, look, you know, you've seen my phone records. We can stop right now. I can go to a computer. I can print them out, you know, myself. And he looked at me, and he said, well, you cross-examined him. I said, you know what, at that point, I grabbed my, and it was, you know, a little circus show. I grabbed my purse and my cover and my briefcase, and I looked at him. I said, I'm done. And he looked at me because I was making a lot of, you know, noise. And I said, I'm done. And then he stood up and he said, Your Honor, I think the commander needs to address you. And he said, she is requesting that I be relieved. So he, you know, sent the jury members out and asked what was going on, and I told him, you know, my opinion of my attorney's performance. And when he sent us on a recess, I went upstairs, and at that moment, I lost it. And I communicated to my attorney. I said, I can only imagine what my best friend went through, because before the Army alleged that she committed suicide, she went through a six-hour interrogation. And the next morning, she didn't show up for work. So, you know, during that whole week, I kind of felt her presence. And, you know, I was just telling him, I said, you know, I'm under a lot of stress. I'm under a lot of pressure, you know, not to share too much personal information. I was also on my menstrual cycle that week, and my cramps were so heavy that I had to take narcotic medication. So I was drugged up on Vicodin, too, the week of my trial. And so I was completely out of it. And so when the judge, the very next morning, you know, we showed back up, and when he went back on the record, he asked if I still wanted to relieve my attorney. And I said, yes, but I'm requesting a continuance to seek, you know, civilian counsel. And he told me no. He said, you had the past 24 hours. You should have, you know, sought an attorney, you know, last evening. And he never did request that I have, you know, he asked if I wanted to go over to Balboa. And I told, I think I told him no, I can't remember. No, and then he said, well, you have an ultimatum. Either you represent yourself or you bring your military attorney back on, or we will continue to trial without you. Now, when I, the previous day, my military attorney kept telling me, he said, whatever you do, do not request to bring me back on, because he said the trial will stop. And one of my witnesses shared with me that the command wanted me to go over to Balboa because my attorney had shared with them, well, you know, she's talking about her best friend. She communicated that she may kill herself. So the judge should have stopped the trial, ordered that I be, you know, psychologically evaluated, but he never did request that. And primarily because the government knew that if he sent me over to Balboa, they would have to stop the trial. So my one of my witnesses said that he overheard the command's lawyer saying, oh, no, if it's going to stop, we're not going to demand that she be seen. We need her convicted. And a month before the trial, I visited with my military attorney, and he shared with me that the convening authority and also the general court-martial convening authority communicated via the prosecutor and the command's attorney that they needed to convict me to discredit me and all the allegations that I had raised in my IG complaints to be of list. So they were protecting themselves, and the IG investigators never provided me whistleblower protection. They were communicating with the command, you know, during the entire year that they were investigating my IG complaint. And when I finally received the results early this year, 2 years later, three of my allegations were substantiated. They had found that the command had committed fraud, waste, and abuse regarding contract administration, hiring the contractors to perform inherently governmental functions, and determined that it was systemic, not only throughout my command, but to the command, our supervisory command. And believe it or not, it was their inspector general's office that I made the hotline complaint to. So they were actually investigating themselves, so which is why they never provided me whistleblower protection. I mean, the whole, and I hate to use the word conspiracy, but it goes straight to the top.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Dick kind of likes that word.
You know, when you have a situation of a military whistleblower, at that time, because I was just talking to someone about this earlier today, I used to be an IG investigator, inspector general, at a previous command for about 2 years. I've been trained, and I've handled investigations. And, you know, and I was a lieutenant at the time, and I was almost swayed, you know, to go along with the command, but I knew I could not. And I was advised, it was an investigation that involved the technical director, who's equivalent to the commanding officer, and I got a phone call at home one evening by the former executive officer who had already transferred, and he advised me to turn the case over to let Human Resource handle it and to take orders to Korea and don't look back. And I took his advice, and I never looked back because the situation was extremely sensitive. Now, this is what I experienced as an investigator. So now I'm on the other end where I'm the whistleblower. I didn't think about the consequences. I thought about the actions. So, what did they do?
So can I ask you this question? Is that the reason why you refused the mask?
No, the reason I refused to go to Captain's Mass is because I know I didn't commit adultery, and I wanted to prove my innocence. So when I refused Mass and the commanding officer was not even at the command, he didn't even present me with the charge sheet. It was the chief staff officer, the command's attorney, and my supervisor. My supervisor was trying to get rid of me anyway. So,
she was messing up the money.
Well, I wasn't messing up the money. I was protecting the money.
I
was messing up the money for them, but I was protecting the money for the taxpayers.
Right.
Because that's my job.
You're protecting our
Thank you.
So when I refused Mass, they told me that I was going, I was being sent away from the command, temporary additional duty assignment. And when I challenged him to tell him that, you know, it violates the Navy Equal Opportunity Policy for Disparate Treatment, and it's also reprisal, so I started quoting all these regulations, and it was almost like, how dare you? I'm the boss, not you.
Right.
So he told me I was going TAD anyway. And even and I have a digital voice recorded message that the attorney that was giving me advice at the time called me that same afternoon and told me that the chief staff officer communicated to her, unless I reelect, you know, to go to Captain's Mass, he was going to bring me up on more charges. And I basically said, no, go back, San. So,
now, did you think going to Mass was an admission of guilt?
Oh, you're always guilty until proven innocent at Mass.
Oh.
You have to prove your innocence. And I felt at court-martial that the government had to prove that I was guilty.
Well,
so,
I'm just gonna say I think that's where you made the mistake, that you thought that they was gonna treat you fairly.
Well, my case has been going on for 2 years now, and during the course of my, they never did comply with the speedy trial clock. I had a civilian attorney represent me in August of 2007. Where we went through an Article 32 hearing, and this hearing was basically an investigation to determine if it even warranted a court-martial. Now, during that hearing, there was only one witness, and that was the preliminary investigator who investigated the allegation of adultery, and during his testimony, he admitted that the command's attorney and himself wrote the statement on behalf of the wife. Keep in mind, in the civilian world, adultery is not even a crime. And even in the military...
Oh, crud. My job.
Hello. Can I get an amen?
Okay. We're going to try and call Sunita back here. I'm not sure what happened. It dropped her from the call. So let's see if we can call her back.
In the meantime, got any questions? You can give us a call, 646-929-2037. Or
hello. Hi, Sunita, we're back.
Okay.
Not sure what happened there, but okay. Wherever you left off.
Okay, like I was explaining, within the civilian world, adultery is not even a crime. But in the military, there's, I think, about 12 different, they call them elements, where you have to meet every single one of these criteria to even bring someone up on charges for adultery, and it's also recommended that the command handle it at the lowest level. So one of them, you know, you have to consider the marital status of the accused. I'm single. I'm not married. And you also have to be able to prove that sexual intercourse, because that's what adultery is, took place. So in meeting all of these elements, which was about 12 or more, her statement, the wife's statement, met every single one of those elements. And after talking to other legal advisors who told me that, you know, to have someone to walk into their office to say, hey, I want to bring someone up on charges, you know, I want to report this particular offense. And so you give them a piece of paper, they write the statement out. But in this particular case, the commands JAG and the preliminary investigating officer wrote out about a 5-page statement, and the wife signed it. So when he admitted to writing the statement, and when he presented, the prosecutor presented these photographs, and he said, yes, that's Commander Penland. And when my attorney asked the question, how do you know that it's her? And he said, because of her breast implants. Now, in the summer of 2006, I had cosmetic surgery, and I had it in the civilian sector. It's not even in my military medical record, so no one knew. So how he knew.
So you can ID somebody with breast implants?
So I asked my attorney to cross-examine him, ask him, how did he know? So, of course, he refused, and they were already embarrassed over it.
You missed that one, didn't you?
Yeah, I missed that one.
Someone ID'd her by her breast. I didn't know you could do that.
Well, what was interesting about that hearing,
bad.
I'm not sure.
It's just, I know those breasts anywhere.
Yeah, it's because of her breast implants. That is her.
Wow. That's kind of scary.
Yeah, that, I mean, you got a breast stalker. I mean, I don't know.
What became of that hearing and his testimony is anytime anyone, you know, gives a statement or testifies and someone is to go to trial, that testimony should be preserved. And if not, if that person is called for to testify again before a grand jury, that they have to preserve it. And if not, it's a violation of the Jinx Act. The government knew that I was going to use the transcript of that hearing to present to the IG investigator. Why did they claim that the tape did not record his testimony? Why did they not preserve his testimony?
What testimony?
His testimony.
That's what I'm saying. What testimony?
Exactly.
It disappeared.
A year later, I'm still waiting for that tape. And he did testify during my court-martial.
I'm thinking it's not going to show up.
Oh, of course it's not.
So, you mind, we got a question from one of our listeners. Cutie Pie asks, she says, first, I'm glad you are a guest you're sharing your story with us, and I find the entire situation interesting and wrong. And she is curious to know if you received a felony charge and if you lost your pension.
Why don't she call in? Call in,
answer,
call in to 646-929-2037. We'll put you on the air and you can ask Ms. Penland yourself. But if you, you know, go ahead, we can go ahead and answer that question for her.
To answer her question, my case is still pending an appeal. I was convicted at the court-martial. I did serve a sentence of 60 days in the Miramar Brig. And
how was that vacation for you?
You know what? To be perfectly honest, I lost weight. I was stress-free. And I met some very interesting brig mates, if you will. I wouldn't even call them prisoners. They're our sisters.
Club men.
Club.
And I'm still active duty. I am still receiving my paycheck, although I am not gainfully employed by the military. I call in every morning. So that's my status.
Oh, so you have to call in?
Yes. While the tats. I've been doing that for about 2 years now.
All right.
Wow.
I would be upset about it. I'm upset.
I mean, so you're saying that your stay at the brig wasn't that bad, that 60 days it was, you know, it was good for you?
Relaxing.
Okay. The worst time during my stay at the brig was the first 3 days. It was over Memorial Day weekend. And they kept me under suicide watch. And I was in however large that cell is, and I was not allowed to go over to the general population side until I was cleared and off suicide watch. I could only leave the cell to go shower, and I couldn't sleep, and I was experiencing panic attacks. So the second day, the guards let me have an hour, you know, to go out to the yard. And one of the guards, he was really nice to me. And he told me, he said, it's not that bad. You just need to get cleared by the medical doctor and go over to general population. And tolerable.
We have a caller.
Hey, we have a caller. So
1 second here.
1 second here. Let's get the call on there.
Okay.
Carla, you on the air?
Hello. I have a question.
Hello.
For Anita. My question is, you said that you're still getting paid and whatnot, and that the other person, the married guy, testified against you. Now, did he get promoted, and is life still the same for him?
He never testified against me. I think in the article it stated that the government granted him immunity, but he never did testify against me. He never confessed to the affair because it never did take place, but he never did get promoted either. His situation is still pending, and that's a topic that I don't really want to discuss.
Okay, I can understand that. Now, my other question for you, so right now you say you're still getting paid, but you're not physically going to work, so is your time still accruing towards retirement?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Do they have any restrictions on you?
No, they have no restrictions. While I was in the brig, the command requested that I be detached from my former position. And what's interesting about that is they replaced me with one of the civilian contractors, by the way, who they recently rehired back on as a government service employee, a revolving door, within revolving door, if you will. So the Bureau of Navy Personnel approved that they detach me, ordered that I show cause for retention through a Board of Inquiry hearing, and that was held in January. And the board members recommended that I be separated from the military without my pension. And the process is still ongoing. I recently appealed the board's decision, and the final decision has to be made through the Secretary of the Navy. So in the meantime, although they detached me from my position, they never did permanently transfer me. So I'm still attached to my former command, and probably so I won't transfer to another command, share my experience of what happened as a military whistleblower, just, I guess, to protect the Navy, if you will. So they just have me calling in every morning by 9 o'clock. And
you're mustering, basically.
Yeah, mustering. I have a civilian audience, so I didn't think that people would be familiar with mustering.
Yeah, I did a couple Tiger Cruises in my day.
Oh, okay. So you know normally when someone goes through a situation like this, they'll send them to, like, the Temporary Processing Unit, TPU, and they'll at least have them show up physically. So
okay.
I don't know, you know, if they think that they're giving me you know, a break by not employing me, but it's stressful.
Well, first, let me say thank you, caller number one, for calling in. And also, Butter had a question. She didn't know what mustering.
I know what mustering is. What is a Tiger Cruise?
A Tiger Cruise is where they take family and friends on the boat.
And you think I wasn't married? I wasn't previously married to a military man, but.
You just didn't get to go on the Tiger Cruise.
No. Well, on a cruise. I don't know if it, it wasn't a Tiger Cruise. It was a one-day cruise.
Nobody cares.
Wasn't it Steel Beach Barbecue?
Anyway, what were you saying? We're going to talk about important stuff here now. She's talking about cruises and whatever.
Well, I think I was talking about my experience in the brig.
Yes.
Yes, let's get back to the bridge. We don't care about cruising.
Okay, well.
So after I finally got cleared, went over to general population, you know, the ladies approached me, started sharing, you know, their stories with me, which was very interesting. And that's years of being incarcerated at the Miramar Brig. And what I personally observed was the fact that they keep the prisoners severely medicated, almost to the point to where they have addictions to narcotic medication.
Why do they keep them medicated?
As a means to control them. And the day-to-day routine there is like someone like me, because my sentence was so short that they couldn't employ me. And they have what they call prison industries, which is another story within itself.
Prison industries?
Prison workforce.
Oh, well, yes. We're familiar. That's where you make money for the prison?
Yeah, and I didn't know that. You know, I've been in the military all these years, and, you know, as a supply officer, when I go to approve a requisition for procuring something, that it's a mandatory, it's mandatory that we go through prison industries first.
Okay.
And I was like, oh my God. So when I heard over the intercom in the morning, you know, industries line up to go to breakfast or line up to go to chow, I'm like, what is industries? And so when the lady started sharing what it was, I never did take a tour through it, and I never could work, you know, there either, because my sentence was so short. But they were telling me all these contracts that they have, you know, on base. They make the signs, the podiums. They do laundry. And, you know, it's free. So while the prisoners work there, And they volunteer, you know, to work there. It's not mandatory. And the incentive is they'll get time off, you know, from their sentence. You know, but they charge them so much for using the telephone there. And I guess prisoners, the long-term prisoners, they get extra money too, you know. And I guess the brig gets extra money, you know, for long-termers. But Miramar is basically a rehabilitation center for sex offenders, for the male. But it's the only DOD correctional institution for females. So the females there, and one prisoner in particular, and she will be an interesting person, and I'll see if she wants to, you know, share her story on your show. But she was in there for 7 years, and she said there's 2 years of her life that she can't even account for because she was under that much medication. And
years?
2 years?
Wow.
Yeah, 2 years. And she did 7 years, and she recalls on several occasions the male prisoners approaching her, requesting permission to use her as a part of the therapy, you know, because they're sex offenders. And, you know, personally, she felt that that's why the females, you know, one of the purposes of why they never have transferred these long-term prisoners into federal prison.
Hold on. Wait, when you say use for therapy,
like in their journals, you know, because they are going through treatment.
I'm thinking and something different.
No, they're not touching them. They're not allowed to touch them.
Okay.
They're talking about them.
Well, you're a little confused on that.
No.
Because when you said, well, that's the reason why they didn't want to transfer, I'm like, oh, wow, it's like...
No, there's a number of reasons why the brig has not transferred the women to, you know, federal or state institutions is because they get extra money. They're already receiving DOD funding, and then they receive federal, you know, additional federal funding as well.
Okay.
It's a money-making...
Yeah, prisons make billions of dollars. That's the reason why prisons are going up as opposed to schools. But like you said, that's a whole nother story for a whole nother day.
So what else would you guys want?
So what do you think that you could have done differently to I mean, would you have done anything differently through all this?
And I'm proud of myself for blowing the whistle, having the courage to blow the whistle. I wished I would have made my allegations to a congressional official instead of to the Navy Inspector General or the Department of Defense Inspector General, primarily because I was never provided whistleblower protection from them, in my opinion. But to ask, should I have blown the whistle, that was my job.
Right.
And, you know, it's my fiduciary responsibility to the American taxpayer, and even to this day, some 2 years later, I'm still, you know, a good custodian of funds. And I think, because the question was asked during my Board of Inquiry hearing by a former commanding officer who came out to testify on my behalf, you know, whether or not he feels that I've been rehabilitated. And he said, Yes, the question was, does she need rehabilitation? In other words, has she learned from her wrongdoing of committing adultery, like the brig experience and taking $10,000 and my pay wasn't enough? He said she does not need rehabilitation. She just needed to be put back to work.
Well,
I'm not bitter towards the Navy, but the reason I've been hanging on to my situation, and because my friends and my family, you know, they tell me, they ask me, you know, why are you still pursuing this? Why haven't you gone out, you know, found yourself another job. I mean, my pay is good.
Excuse me, Sanita. We actually have another caller.
Okay.
Let me get the caller on. Caller?
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're all right. How you doing?
Good, good. Hey, what's up, Butter?
Hey, what's going on? Who is this?
This is Eric.
Oh, hey.
Hey,
okay.
How you doing?
Eric. Eric's in the military, right, if I got that right? Did you have a question for
Sanita? I sure do. I'm curious. I'm listening to your situation, listening to your story, and I've been in the Navy for 20 years now, and I understand some of the things you're saying, and as a minority in the Navy, I can relate to some of the things you're saying. I know that when I first came in the Navy, there are a lot of things that happened 20 years ago that don't occur today. You know, I know that a lot of situations we were a lot of commands I was, well, my first command station at, it was only, you know, very few African Americans, and there were certain things that, you know, happened that, you know, if somebody stood up and say, hey, this is not right, that person literally would disappear. We wouldn't see them anymore overnight. You know, they would be gone somewhere else, and you never heard from that person again.
Yeah.
But one of the things I'm listening to what you're talking about, a question that has arisen for me is the fact that you decided to make light of all the things, the wrongdoings that your command was doing as far as spending the money, how they were spending the money to IG. When did you decide to do this? Did you decide to do it before all these allegations came alight, or did you do it after the fact?
I was already reporting certain infractions in 2006 to the commanding officer. In August of 2006, I was already investigating a procurement contract myself. So throughout my entire tour there were a lot of constant irregularities that I was reporting directly to the commanding officer, and he even testified during my trial, he testified to that fact. So by the time they told me that I was going PAD, you know, for refusing NJP, I made my initial report. And see, this is really, really interesting. I'm glad you asked that question because it almost slipped my mind. When I contacted the IG investigator, initially I wanted to report disparate treatment. A lot of the military doesn't even acknowledge disparate treatment as being an equal opportunity violation. And I'm not sure, Eric, if you used to be a CMEO or
just
familiar, you know, with, okay. Being a CMEO, you know, that's one thing that we don't recognize is disparate treatment. And what disparate treatment is when you are a member of a protected class, which I was, and you are qualified for a position and you are removed from that position and replaced by someone else. And in my case, I was replaced illegally by a defense contractor. So when I initially went over to Fleet Training Center and I tried to report it to the CMEO there, she said, the lieutenant there, the admin officer, she said, well, my CMEOs, they're not here, so it sounds like a reprisal issue, so you have to report it to SERPAC, Surface Forces Pacific, to their IG office. So when I went over there, they said, whoa, you know, Commander, sorry you're going through your situation, but because your immediate supervisor, ISIC that is on the East Coast, you
mm-hmm.
have to report it to their office. So I'm like, okay, you know,
well,
you know,
but why not pick up the phone and call the 1-800? Why?
I was traumatized.
Mm-hmm.
It's so easy to say this is what you need to do until you're actually in the seat.
But
so
I understand what you're saying.
As a matter of fact, I even tried to report it to the CMEO at the command.
I
you know, when they
you...
told me you're going TAD. But
I understand what you're saying.
Himself.
I understand
he
what you're saying, but a lot of times when we deal with situations, you know, you haven't had, you admittedly said that you have been a part of an IG team before, and I've been a part of SEMIA before. So we know, you know, our rights and responsibilities of the Navy more so than any other people who are just in the Navy who've never been in those positions to be on an IG team or to be on a SEMIA team. We know these our rights and our positions better than those other people. So we know that when we're faced with a certain circumstance or situation, exactly what to do, no matter what, no matter who's against us, we know we can pick up that phone and call that hotline, and within 72 hours, somebody's going to be out there and digging
Eric,
into what's going on.
I tried to report it to the SEMIA at the command first, but he was pulled to the side. And if you've been listening to the entire story, I said that the commanding officer was temporary, was TAD. So at this point, it was the chief staff officer who was directing me to go TAD, but he's also the acting commanding officer. So the JAG, she pulled the SEMIO out of my meeting with him that I tried to file my complaint with him right there on the spot. And she advised him, hey, you work for the commanding officer, and it's the acting chief staff officer. So whatever she just told you, you have a duty to tell him.
Right.
And when I realized that he was not going to take my complaint, that's when I started seeking assistance elsewhere. Now, that was on the 28th of March. The 29th, I executed the TAD orders, and I also contacted the IG investigator on the 30th. And when I contacted the IG investigator, he told me that NECC, which is the command, did not have a SEMIO or an Equal Opportunity Advisor on staff. So he requested that I report an all-inclusive reprisal complaint, equal opportunity complaint. Now, keep in mind, who am I reporting all of this to? An IG investigator. So he coached me and asked that he said, hey, do you have anything else? Anything fraud, race, and abuse? He said, I know you guys have been probably doing some stuff illegally. That's what prompted me to report everything else. I just didn't, you know, hey, yeah, they're doing this to me, so I'm going to do this back at them. No, it did not go down that way.
Do you think that the officials that are looking in on this perceive it to be that way? You know, hey, look, if I'm going to go down, everybody's going down. I'm reporting everything. You think it may be seen that way?
Well, when he coached me to, you know, to report that irregularities, it was already information that I had already previously reported to the commanding officer. But my commanding officer at that time was scheduled to retire in September. And I did not know that even to this day he ended up going to work for the contract, for the contracting company. Now, with you being in the military yourself, I have a question for you. How familiar are you when you see these officers and even some senior enlisted people retiring, let's say on the Friday, and then you see them walking right back into probably a different office, if not the same office, in their civilian clothes while still on terminal leave?
How familiar am I with that?
Throughout their career? Yeah.
But that currently happened at the command in which I'm assigned right now. We had a senior enlisted person who literally walked down the hall, and practically on the way down the hall shifted from his uniform into civilian clothes, and he's still there at the command. He's making twice as much money as he was making before.
As a GF or as a contractor?
He is a GF.
Can I interject by saying that a lot of these acronyms y'all using don't know what the hell y'all talking about. I might want to break it down for us laymen.
Because we're over here looking at each other like, what the hell is that?
Yeah, y'all did. GAP, TAP, RAS, I'm like,
ABC.
Yay.
My apologies.
No problem. I'm with you, bro.
I'm glad
saying
that you two can understand
each other. It is. We, you know, we would like to know, too. It's like you speaking Venezuelan. That's
I understand.
All.
My apologies, and I know better.
No, don't apologize.
I just got carried away, that's all. I apologize.
That's all right. Hey.
Well, Eric, you understand where I'm coming from, where you see these military personnel, regardless of whatever their pay grade is, whether enlisted or an officer, retiring, and you've observed them come right back in, you know, within a couple of days of their retirement to a government service position.
You know what's funny is, it's interesting you say that, because what's funny is the particular person I'm talking about was on, just like you said, was on term leave. The like a month later, retired. Didn't even take a day off of work. Retired on a Friday at 5 o'clock and came back to work Monday morning. So he had his job was literally seamless.
He
and are you aware?
And went back to work as a civilian on Monday.
Right. So
it happens all the time.
If you let me explain it, just give me a moment. Let me explain exactly what I'm saying. This particular person in the Navy on active duty, had been in the Navy like 24 years, 25, 26 years, something like that. He was a master chief in the Navy. I'll go ahead and say that. And he knew he was going to retire. He went on term leave. There was a position available. He told the commanding officer, I want that position. They made it available for him. They held it available for him. And when it's the day he went on term leave, he moved his stuff down into that office, his personal items down into that office. So while he was on term leave, he was working in that office, and somebody else was already had fulfilled his position. So like a month later, on a Friday at 5 o'clock, he retired. I know because I was there. I was at his, I performed his retirement ceremony. And Monday morning, he was a civilian still doing the same job. So he literally was collecting two paychecks.
I have a question for you, Eric.
Yes.
Did you witness any other applicants being interviewed for that position, or the commanding officer just held that position for him?
We had someone in that position already. And, you know, just as well as I know, you know, depending on who you are, information, knowledge for certain things are on a need-to-know basis. And that person, for some reason, just didn't come to work one day, and that was it.
Wow. So, Eric, how does that make you feel?
I've been in the Navy. I'm enlisted, and the field that I work in, you kind of you can't control everything. You know, you see things.
Come on, Eric, let it out. Let us know how.
Shut up, Andrew.
Okay.
You see things that aren't right.
Did it make you feel angry?
At this point in time, I only look to take care of those around me. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. We have another caller that we're going to bring in.
If it's not affecting them, then I don't bother with it.
Eric.
We have another caller we're going to bring in. One moment.
Okay.
Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hey, I'm on the air.
Yeah. How can we help?
I just have a question. I don't know, you know, really how to word this question, but I'm just assuming, you know, I'm gonna say how I say it. If you see a nigger, do you beat him with a bat, or do you hang him from a tree?
Whoa.
What?
Okay, hang up on him.
Is it?
Thank you, caller number two. You're stupid.
Wow.
That had nothing to do with the Sunday that we're on. But go ahead and
You know what, guys? He did not know how to word it, but I understood where he was coming from.
We understood where he was coming from.
He just worded it inappropriately, because I never did identify, you know, whether or not I was black or white. But being from the South, I know how they treat certain people when they step out of place.
Yeah, I'm from the South, too.
And one thing that my mom and my grandmother encouraged me to do a year ago was to let this situation go. Because he said, you do not know how they will treat you as a result of you trying to do what is right. So I don't know who that caller was. I just want to let him know that I think I was trying to understand where he was coming from, You know, you don't hang a black person. I don't believe in using the N-word. You don't hang anybody, any person of color, just anybody from a tree or go after them with a bat or use your position or your authority to try to conceal your own wrongdoing, you know, just to protect your pocket. And that's what, in my opinion, what it's been about all this time, people trying to protect their livelihoods by treating us like we're still, you know, in the 60s or the 50s or whatever era.
Yeah.
You know, we have an African American president now. You know, those days are long gone.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
People need to respect that and recognize. Okay.
Well, all right.
I'm off my soapbox.
That's all right.
Now, I got about 25 of them. You can use one anytime. All right. Well,
Eric, did you have any other questions?
No, I'm just listening. I could say a whole lot of stuff, and I'm not. I'm just.
I think we all can.
Yeah, I'm just listening. Right, well. I understand where you're coming from. Absolutely, understand exactly where you're coming from. I could tell you a lot of stuff, you know, and take
okay,
up
well,
everybody's
well,
time.
Hold on a second. I think we have another call.
Probably
we're having another caller on the line.
Hopefully, they're not as ignorant as the other one.
Stop. Okay. Stop.
Caller number two.
Yeah, I love beer, and I love hanging niggas from a tree, too. I agree with that first caller, man. He was good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Nigger!
Okay.
All right.
Wow.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in, Eric. If you have any other questions or, you know, want to send some information to Sunita, you can at smoothdrama at smoothdrama.com, and we'll make
I'm
sure that you
get it. I'm on the website right now.
Cool. You can send it through there. Thank
Eric,
you for calling
can I
in.
Offer something to you?
I'm sorry?
Eric, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
If I can offer this to you, if you are observing certain, you know, practices at your command that violates regulation, I would encourage that you report it.
Okay.
And don't be afraid, because that's what's happening. No one is stepping up to take responsibility, you know, to stop this. And if you don't report it, it's going to continue.
Well, you know that once you get to a certain point in your career in the Navy, you have an obligation to take care of those who don't know better. And I'm at that point in my career where I had that obligation, and I exercise it because I know that I have a voice. Not everyone has a voice. You know what I'm saying?
Good
and being in the position I'm in now, I'll be honest, I'm a recruiter, and I see a lot of wrongdoings, a lot. And if I was to go around and blow the... The thing I've done about it is in my community, with my guys, I've told my guys, I will not tolerate this. And if anything happens, if you're doing something that is wrong, I will make sure to take you to headquarters and turn you in. That's what I do
okay.
about it. And in the Good meantime, if as long as you're doing what you're supposed to do the right way, I got you back 110%.
Good.
All right. Thank you, Eric.
Thank you, Eric.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye,
Dre.
Continue to tune in.
Okay.
Every
okay.
Tuesday and Thursday night, 9 o'clock.
All right.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye. That was a good call. Very good caller.
Definitely better than the
other two.
Yeah.
I think he had too much beer.
Yeah.
I think so.
I don't think he can spell beer.
Maybe he thought that was an acronym.
Yeah. Oh, now one of our blog talk, well, not blog talk, our Mogulus talk, Chatters wanted you to explain Article 15, and
Article
also
15, Captain's Mask.
And also he was saying what was Representative Bob Filner's role in your can you explain that?
Yes, Article 15 is Captain's Mask.
Okay.
That's where the commanding officer will adjudicate your case and determine the punishment. And depending upon whether or not you're an officer or an enlisted, you can receive certain punishments.
Oh, we have another call.
Uh-oh.
Caller number one, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Smooth Drama. This is Andre. How you all doing?
We're all right.
Good. Hey, Andre.
Sainita, how are you?
Fine. How are you?
Oh, just fine. You know, very interesting topics. I just started doing some research. I just Googled your name and came up with all kinds of stuff. And I'm losing track now. I'm sorry. Okay, my first question is, earlier you said that you wish that you had contacted a congressional rep, but I found a report stating that you contacted Bob Filder. Is that true?
I contacted Congressman Filner about 8 or 9 months after I had filed the complaint. The dates are a little skewed. I filed the first IG complaint April 2007. I contacted Congressman Filner's office February 2008. And the reason I had to contact him was because there's a timeline. Whenever you file a complaint of reprisal, that they have to investigate it. The first one is 180 days. If there's a second complaint, 90 days to prevent additional acts of reprisal from occurring against that particular member. And they kept blowing me off. You know, oh, we're still investigating it. There's no status. There's no status. So I contacted the congressman to just find out what the status was.
And I read that.
Inquiry. Okay.
And I guess they still haven't made a claim from what I'm reading.
Well, in February, he made his inquiry. In March of 2008, that's when my military attorney informed me that they needed to find me guilty, you know, to prove all the allegations I had raised to be frivolous. So in April of 2008, when I discovered that they never provided me whistleblower protection, and I have evidence of that, so I filed another IG complaint for failure to provide whistleblower protection in April, and then I, of course, was convicted in May, and during my stay in the brig, I attempted to contact the congressman's office again. But by now, you know, they had me under lock and key. They were, you know, even screening my telephone calls, talking with my civilian attorney and military attorney when I requested even that my sentence at the brig, as short as it was, I didn't want to be in there, you know, with convicted murders and so forth. I requested that be deferred, and the convening authority, actually the admiral, said that he wishes that I rot in jail. And I was like, oh, my goodness. So, of course.
Well, I mean, what I'm reading, I mean, you heard, for lack of better terms, a scam, a multi-billion dollar scam. And yeah, I think you did step on somebody's toes. Do you feel the same? Do you think that they're trying to use this adultery just to shut you up?
Yes, what I have since uncovered. Now, keep in mind, last year I was preparing for a defense. Now, with sitting at home every day, I've had more than enough time to finally, with a clear mind, look through all of these mounds of paperwork that I have collected. I have about 24 months of paperwork. And I also have additional evidence that I've reported to another congressional official, by the way. But what happened, what I uncovered is big, is huge. And I'm not going to go into details about that, but it was the agency that I made my initial complaint to. They were the ones that put this contract in place. And when they put the contract in place, they had to when I made the allegations of fraud, waste, and abuse and contract mismanagement, they had to report it to their supervisor for them to investigate it to avoid a conflict of interest. the outcome of my IG complaint, I do have a copy of that, determined systemic issues within my supervisory command, who investigated themselves, if you will, regarding contract mismanagement, using all of these contractors to fill military vacancies. If we don't have military personnel, you know, just because of our manning shortages, they've since used a civilian contracting company as a staffing agency, basically, one-stop shopping, where all as all of these people are retiring out of the military, and Eric, he said it best, you know, instead of, you know, making government service positions for them, they are creating all of these contract billets, contract positions. And as the contracting officer, one of the problems that I had was if I'm the comptroller and if we're hiring these contractors, why couldn't I sit down to interview them to determine their salary? Their salary was unknown to me. So they could have been making anywhere from $100,000 to $200,000. So there's a lot of information that I presented to the IG investigators as the comptroller. And when they realized that, you know, wait a second, she's making allegations against us, you know, so we need to shut her up by any means necessary.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
That's a weird
dream.
You know. We're just
understanding.
No, I have. I give you many props. I give you many props, Anita. I mean, when you're dealing with admirals and you have five captains up against you, and you have all these superior officers standing in front of you, and you go up through the chain of command properly and. You did everything that you were supposed to. You contacted the right people that you were supposed to. Yet, you know, you acted properly. From what I'm finding out. So, no, I give you a lot of props. You did your little time. I guess I have a little one more question. I guess, you know, I found that you lost your retirement benefits. Is that true?
No,
oh, not yet. Okay. Yeah, I did read that. That's cool. Also, now, were you legitimately convicted as a felon?
My conviction is still going through the appeal process. So,
okay.
To be perfectly well, at this point, my case can still be overturned.
True. No. Yeah. I'm familiar with law, so. I follow you very well. I follow you very well. So no, that's understandable. And obviously, I guess you know I guess this husband who didn't make a statement. I guess I read somewhere that he was granted immunity. He was granted immunity just not to testify. Now is that true? I don't know. You may not know that either. But I mean, it's just a little. You know, convenient, should we say? And then, you know, and now he's divorced. So I found websites that, you know, I found websites that are pro and con for you. But I wish you all the best in your appeal.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, caller.
Yeah.
Thank you, caller number one.
Caller three or four.
Three. Number one right now. So.
Did you have any other questions for Sunita?
No other questions. I mean, I just got the comment that when did your trial go continue? Or is your appeal just ongoing and you just...
Wait to hear.
It's still out there in appeal land. I'm just waiting to hear back. But one thing that I can offer to, you know, the listeners and... This is just a caveat from the question that you asked me earlier. What would I have done differently? Nothing. I'm proud of what I did, and it took a lot of strength and courage and a lot of prayer. I was diagnosed with a condition back in December where I have an immune deficiency and basically caused from the stress. I'm on... iron pills right now and also aspirin in the condition of thrombocytosis, where my blood platelets are extremely elevated. So about 2 or 3 weeks ago, my doctor, she suggested that I go on chemotherapy medication. Now, that could cause leukemia, and I don't want to take this medication just because of the side effects. But if I were to go into a primary stage of this condition, it could also cause leukemia, too. So I've been trying to relieve myself of all of this ongoing stress. So imagine living through a situation like this for 2 years. I've had so many people, active duty military, senior officers, to walk away from me, you know, on the sidelines cheering me on, but, oh, no, even though I witnessed this and that or whatever, I can't because I'm protecting my own career.
Right.
And, you know, I can understand people, you know, who have families. I'm single, just, you know, with a dependent. So I am only looking out for me. But to me, it wasn't about me looking out for me or protecting me or my family.
Were trying to protect the greater good?
Exactly. You know, the American taxpayers, I mean, look at what we're going through right now in our economy. And it's so much going on, and I know I'm not slandering the government whatsoever. All I want to do is encourage people. I mean, we have a really, really good positive administration in office right now, and the only way that he can help us is if we help him. The whistleblowers need to be protected first and foremost, and I don't really consider myself to be a whistleblower. They just title us that, you know, people who report, you know, wrongdoing. But as long as they can pass some type of law or a better law, and I know there's one on the table right now that could allow people to sue, you know, if they are retaliated against, but not, you know, military. But regardless, to me, it's not even a matter of being able to sue to get money. As long as they know that they will not be retaliated against, and if some of their complaints are found to be substantiated, they need to be able to hold the people who committed the retaliatory acts against them accountable. When my IG complaint came back, they found my commanding officer had violated federal law, Title V of the U.S. Code, where he used these contractors to perform, you know, personal services. Do you know what they said in the outcome of my complaint? Because he is retired, that they're recommending no further action taken against him.
I'm shocked by that.
And not only is he receiving his retirement check, he's also receiving a government check because he's a defense contractor.
Right.
I guess that bud is on that, son.
So I just encourage people to, if you witness something, report it, but report it to your congressional official. I do not trust the DOD IG. I do not trust the Department of the Navy IG. Why? Because I'm living proof of it.
Well, I don't trust too many of them.
You don't trust anybody.
Yeah. Well.
You know, I can offer that, you know, I'm not trying to be a whistleblower advocate here, but you just have to stay strong and pray. And I don't wish anyone, you know, any ill towards anyone that committed all of this against me. I just thank the Lord.
Thanks for you.
Well, we applaud your honesty and candidness here, and, of course, hope that this is resolved in the way it should be, where the people who have done wrong
are punished.
I mean, that's what we strive for, and that's what we're supposed to strive for, punishing those who have actually done something wrong.
Right.
Not those who are trying to stop those who have done wrong from doing wrong.
So we commend you.
Thank you.
Doing right by us, the taxpayers.
And, of course, once you get this resolved,
We'd like to hear about it.
We'd love to hear about it.
We'd like to hear you back on the show or even send us an email. But
okay, sure.
For those listeners out there, if you have any other questions for Sainita, you can send them through our website at the Contact Us button or send us an email at smoothdrama@smoothdrama.com. We'd like to thank you, Sainita, for being on our show.
Oh, you're welcome.
And telling us your story and answering, you know, the callers that called in and even the ones that...
they don't count. You know, you talk about them.
But we do appreciate your time.
Yes, we do.
Oh, not a problem. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
And you have an open... invitation anytime you come on,
just let us know.
We hear.
Well, hopefully the next time I will be able to share some of my poetry.
Oh yeah,
okay,
well definitely,
that's what open invitation is.
Absolutely,
anytime.
Okay.
come check us out. We hear.
All right.
You.
Every Tuesday and Thursday night.
Okay,
thank you.
Good night.
All right. So, yeah, that was very, very interesting. We got to hear some interesting stuff.
Very interesting. I'm glad that we were able to do that.
And, of course, as it stated, everyone has a chance to form their own opinion. So, I mean, the evidence is out there for you to Google the situation. You can however you want to go about it, because, of course, we know there are some people out there who believe that maybe she wasn't forthright. Maybe she was guilty. I mean, and of course, that's your opinion. But being that I don't think that we'll be able to get the military to come on the show and tell their side.
Right.
Right now, we just going to go with her side, objectively speaking.
Right. But I'm glad that we were able to speak with her and, you know, and discuss her story. I'd like to thank all our listeners for tuning in, the callers that called in. And you want to make sure that you're going to our online store, as Dick wants you to go buy that phone.
Yes.
And send your pictures to dick@smoothdrama.com. To send in topics, you can email us at smoothdrama@smoothdrama.com. To stay up to date on future events, interviews, whatnot, you can text the word
smooth drama to the number 41411.
And on that note, we'd like to say good night, and we will see everybody on Tuesday night. Again, thank you for tuning in.
Tuesday night, we will have my boys HISD.
Right. Yes.
The Houston Independent Spit District. So have your handkerchief because they spit.
But we'll be interviewing them on Tuesday night at 9 o'clock. Again, thank you for tuning in, and we will see you on Tuesday night.
Good night.
Good night.
He is the host with the most, and he's rocking coast to coast smooth. She is the lady with her hands.
Where in the hell did you get your news from?
Drama.
Together you've got
smooth drama.